Very thankful to have another opportunity to bring a lesson tonight. I thought it would be good to study Psalm 27 concerning waiting on the Lord. This is one of the songs that we often sing. We started out with tonight. But it's a subject that we all need to be considering. We have many good examples in the scriptures to learn from and consider how the Lord is working a plan for each of us and on a broader level as well, and how we need to consider his work and be patient and be waiting on him to complete the work that he intends to do. We'll begin tonight in Psalm 27. We'll begin in verse 1 here. It says, a psalm of David. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise up against me, in this will I be confident. We'll stop here just briefly before continuing on, but we notice David here pointing out that the Lord was his light in verse 1, and his salvation, and the strength of his life. And that needs to be our mind as well, that he is our light, that he is our salvation, and that he is the one that strengthens us to do the things that we can do. We see that David said that his heart was not going to fear man, and instead his confidence was in the Lord who would save him. You know, this should remind us of what Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 10 in verses 28 to 31. There Jesus said, and fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So we see Jesus in verse 28 saying, don't fear those who can kill the body. And of course, that certainly is a temptation for all of us. If we were faced with somebody that was threatening to kill us, that would certainly be a temptation for all of us. But what does he say here? And what was David's mind as he was living? He said, I will not fear what men are going to do, and that his trust was in the Lord taking care of him and delivering him. And so here Jesus is pointing out that not even a sparrow falls to the ground without the Father. Truly, our Heavenly Father is working all things in this world, even having to do with the lives of these little creatures around us. And so, and then he points out that we are of greater value than these sparrows. And we need to consider that the Lord is also watching over and working with us and protecting us. And so as he concludes there in verse 31, Jesus says, fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Certainly our Father has a great purpose for all of us that we study and we hopefully consider each day. And he is working to carry out that purpose with all of us, that we would be conformed to the image of Christ and made like Christ. And that is his plan for us in this life. And he has promised us that if we will follow him and serve him, that he will carry out that plan. But we also have to realize that he's going to carry out that plan on his terms, in his ways, and in his time. And it does require us to wait on him. As we go back to Psalm 27 and we continue on in verse 4, David says here, one thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And now shall my head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. So we see here that David's desire was to dwell with the Lord, to dwell in the house of the Lord. And that certainly also should be our desire as well. But at the same time, David also knew that there were going to be times of trouble. In verse 5, he says, in the time of trouble, he shall hide me. So he knew there were going to be those times of trouble. And certainly we also understand that there are going to be times of trouble that we all face at various times. And we need to, again, have in mind what David is pointing out here. In those times of trouble, who is it that is in control? And who is it that will see us through those times of trouble? And just as David said, in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion and set me up upon a rock. And so we need to consider that the Lord is going to take care of all of us as he is carrying out his plan for us. And that we need to have our trust in him and that he is going to do that. And as David said there in verse 6, the Lord was going to lift him up above his enemies and that he was going to offer up praises and sing praises to the Lord. And certainly we need to be singing praises to the Lord as well when he protects us and delivers us. Now, as we continue in verse 7, he says, hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. When thou sayest, seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. We notice here where he mentions waiting on the Lord, and we consider, it's interesting to consider that word, that it literally means to bind together. So David is telling us to wait or be bound together with the Lord and in expectation that the Lord is going to bring about his purpose in us. And so he says, wait on the Lord and be of good courage. We see again in these few verses that we just completed here in Psalm 27, where once again we see David's great faith and his trust in the Lord. And we're reminded, though, of the very difficult times that David did face at times, and where he says, I had fainted unless I had believed. So there were times that David was ready to faint, except for the fact that he had faith in the promises that God had given. And he remembered those promises, and he remembered that work that the Lord was doing with him when he was in the middle of those times where he otherwise would have fainted. And we need to remember that as well when we face difficult times, that we would be reminded of the Lord, his promises, his words that encourage us to wait on him and understand that he has a purpose in all of these things. The Lord, David knew that the Lord was going to ultimately deliver him, but it was going to be in the Lord's good time that he would do that. And so in the meantime, he himself, and he also encourages us to have courage and to have strength and faith that the Lord is going to bring us through these things. Isaiah chapter 40, we also see another passage here where he talks about waiting on the Lord. Isaiah 40, beginning in verse 27, he says, "Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint." So he's reminding Israel here of who the Lord is. He is the creator of the ends of the earth, as he says there in verse 28. He doesn't faint. He doesn't become weary. And there is no searching of his understanding. We're nothing to be compared to him. And we need to be reminded of that great power and strength that he has, and that he is the one who is in control and who is working all of these things. And as he says in verse 29, that he is going to give power to the faint, and that he is going to give them and increase their strength. There in verse 31, he says, "They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint." And why is that? Well, it's because of that strength that the Lord will give us to get through these things. But we remember, or we realize then, when we're waiting for something, we have an expectation of something that is yet to come. We see some examples of where this word is used. Job chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. He says, "There not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of an hireling? As a servant earnestly desires a shadow, and as an hireling looks for the reward of his work." So that word "looks for" there is exactly the same word that we've been looking at when we're talking about waiting on the Lord. Here, these Job is speaking of these hirelings. Of course, he's comparing our days on this earth to those of these hirelings. But he says, as this servant is desiring the end of the day, the shadow to come, they're looking for, they're waiting for this reward of their work. So there is this expectation that they're waiting for at the end of the day. And so we need to understand when he's talking about us waiting on the Lord, that there is an expectation that we have as well. There are the promises that God has given us if we will faithfully serve him in this life. And that is a great hope and great encouragement if we can remind ourselves of those things that he has promised, and the expectation that we can have and hope for as we are waiting. In Job chapter 30, beginning in verse 25, he says here, "Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? And was not my soul grieved for the poor? When I looked for good, then evil came unto me. And when I waited for light, there came darkness." We see Job commenting here in verse 26, "When I looked for," and that again is when he waited for good, he says, "then evil came unto me." So we also see that Job had an expectation, but the timing of Job's expectation at this point was different than what the Lord had in mind. And so the Lord had in mind that there were going to be some of these things that were happening to Job. When Job had in mind that he was expecting good, there was this point in time where evil happened to him, and there was darkness. So we need to understand also that there is this time component that is very much a part of waiting on the Lord, and that we need to be patiently waiting for him and trusting that he is going to carry out what he said he will do. In Psalm 25, beginning in verse 1, we see here again where David notes how he trusted and he waited on the Lord. Beginning in verse 1, he says here, a psalm of David. Unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. O my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not mine enemies triumph over me. Yet let none that wait on thee be ashamed. Let them be ashamed which transgress without cause. Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day. So David here notes twice in these few verses how he is waiting on the Lord, and he's asking the Lord for those who are waiting on the Lord to not be ashamed, to not let their expectation and their hope go unanswered. But David notes here that he is putting his trust in God, as he says there in verse 2, and that he continues every day, as he noted there in verse 5, he says, on thee do I wait all the day. The Lord, David knew that the Lord was working these things and working with him in these things. And so we need to have that in mind as well, that the Lord is at work. Ephesians 1 in verse 11 notes this purpose that God has. It says there, in whom also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestinated according to the purpose of him who works all things after the counsel of his own will. So we're reminded that the Lord does have a purpose in mind. He had a purpose in mind when he created us from the very beginning. And that purpose included the fact that he was going to send Christ. Even from the very foundation of the world, he had in mind that he was going to send Christ, and that Christ was going to show us the way to eternal life, and that our purpose while we're here on this earth is to be conformed to the image of his Son. And so here it's noting that, yes, God has a purpose, and he is working all things after the counsel of his own will. All of these things that are happening are with God's purpose in mind, and we need to be encouraged by that, knowing that there is this expectation that we all have that what God said he's going to accomplish, that he's going to bring it about. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, we again should be reminded, though, that there is a time aspect to these things that are happening. Ecclesiastes 8, beginning in verse 5, he says here, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. But to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore the misery of man is great upon him. For he knoweth not that which shall be, for who can tell him when it shall be? There is no man that has power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither has he power in the day of his death. And there is no discharge in that war, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. So we see here that, as he says in verse 6, to every purpose there is time and judgment. And we cannot tell when these things are going to be. The Lord is at work in our lives and in this world, and he is bringing these things about he's working these things after the counsel of his own will. And we need to consider that and realize that he is at work. Just a few chapters back in Ecclesiastes 3, we often hear this at funerals, but it's something that's good for us to consider at all times. Beginning in verse 1, it says, to everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has he that works in that which wherein he labors? I have seen the travail which God has given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their hearts so that no man can find out the work of God that God makes from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. So we consider that there is a time for every purpose under the heaven. We see many things happening under this heaven as we look around us. And there is a time to all of these things that happen. And we need to consider, what is our role in as we are in this world? Well, it's what he notes there in verse 12, that we need to be rejoicing and to do good in our life. And of course, the Lord reveals to us through his words what that good is. And we need to be seeking that good and seeking to live according to that good all of our days, and to be rejoicing in the Lord and in the ways of the Lord as we live here on this earth. That's our role. And we realize that these times for these different things that are happening, we don't necessarily know most of these things. Sometimes maybe we know approximately when certain things might be getting ready to happen or coming to an end. But generally speaking, we don't know much at all about the timing of all of these purposes under the heaven. And we can look at many examples in the Old Testament and consider some individuals there and consider how they had no idea what plans and purposes and timing was either. But yet we can look at their examples and be encouraged to follow those examples of faith and trust. One of those that we'll look at and consider for just a few minutes is that of Joseph. We're not going to go in depth into Joseph. We certainly don't have time to do that. But we'll just briefly remind ourselves of some of the things that Joseph went through as the Lord was accomplishing his purpose in Joseph and his greater purpose with the Israelites and with the nation of Egypt and so on. In Genesis 39, verses 1 through 6, this was following the time when Joseph, at 17 years old, had been sold as a slave into to the Midianites, which then carried him down to Egypt, sold him to a man, an officer of Pharaoh's named Potiphar. And so here in verse 1, 17 years old, it says, Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him an overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught that he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. So we see here now this terrible thing happens to Joseph, that he's literally sold by his brothers as a slave. And you know, I think if we were in that situation, that would be a pretty great time of despair, would it not? But what did Joseph do in this situation? Well, he went down and he served under this man Potiphar as his servant. And certainly, as we see noted many times in this short passage, it says the Lord was with the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. The Lord was working this situation with Joseph as he was a servant there under Potiphar. And he caused the things that Joseph did to prosper. But we note here that Joseph's mind was not one of despair, where he just gave up and said, well, I've been sold off by my brothers and there's just no hope. Joseph did, as we just read earlier there in Ecclesiastes, where it said that we need to rejoice and do good in this life. And that is in whatever situation that we're in. So here's Joseph in this situation, and he is going to serve the Lord in whatever capacity that he is able to in that situation. And of course, the Lord blesses him in the process. And we should consider, what if that was us? How would we have responded in that situation? Would we have been encouraged to continue to serve the Lord, or would we have been tempted to just throw up our hands and say, I'm a slave now, and I've lost all my freedom? Well, we see Joseph here was trusting that the Lord was working a plan, and he certainly was. But of course, we also know how Potiphar's wife unjustly accused Joseph, and so he was thrown into the prison. And so again, the same opportunity for temptation. You know, now he's gone from being a slave to being somebody that has been thrown into an Egyptian prison, far away from home with these ones who are there in that prison. But we see what happens there as well in Genesis 39. In verse 20, it says, and Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So here he is, a prisoner in the prison, but yet what happens? Well, Joseph continues his faithfulness to the point where the prison keeper does what? He literally puts the prisoners under Joseph's hand there in verse 22. And so it says, whatever they did there in that prison, he was the doer of it. And again, we note that the Lord was all working with Joseph all through this process. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him this mercy and gave him this favor with the keeper of the prison. And so now we're seeing yet again that, we understand what the Lord's ultimate aim and purpose was with Joseph, in that he was going to raise up Joseph to be ruler over all of Egypt. And we understand that how each of these situations that Joseph has been put in started out being a servant under Potiphar, and now he's a servant here in this prison. And in each of these situations, the Lord is prospering his hand, and he's becoming the one that is overseeing all of these things. It's interesting to compare the prison keeper to Potiphar there in verse 22. It said the prison keeper committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was a doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. So it was very similar to Potiphar, where Potiphar didn't even know all of the things that he had and that were under Joseph's authority. He had trusted Joseph with all of those things, and here now is this prison keeper that did not look to anything that was under Joseph's hand, because he trusted Joseph that he would be faithful in serving. So we see here how the Lord is accomplishing multiple levels of his purpose here. He's working with Joseph individually to form Joseph's heart, but at the same time, he's also made a promise concerning what he's going to do with the children of Israel in Egypt, and Lord willing, in just a minute, we'll look at some of that work as well. But the Lord has a great work that he's getting ready to do with bringing the children of Israel into Egypt. And so here the Lord is accomplishing that purpose and setting this situation up where Joseph is going to become the ruler of Egypt. But at the same time, he's also working with Joseph and Joseph's heart. Joseph spent at least 2 years in that prison from the time that the butler and the baker there that had been thrown into the prison by Pharaoh, from the time that they left until they eventually told Pharaoh about Joseph. It says it was 2 full years in Genesis chapter 41. So Joseph was there in that situation for at least 2 years in that prison. But, of course, the Lord did have a bigger purpose, and he wasn't going to leave him there forever. But consider, what if you had been in that prison and you had been there for 6 months and then a year and then 2 years? What would you be starting to wonder? Well, how long is it going to be before I'm out, or am I going to be out of here? And again, we're reminded that we need to wait on the Lord. The Lord has his purpose that he is working, and he has his timing as well that is part of that purpose. And so as we continue on in Genesis 41, we look down in verse 44, and we consider that eventually the Lord did deliver Joseph out of that prison. He interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, and Pharaoh ultimately set him to be the second in command over all of the land of Egypt. In verse 44, it says, Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Sounds very similar to what happened in the prison at a much smaller scale. But now he's been put over the entire land of Egypt. And Pharaoh says, without you, nobody is going to lift up his hand or his foot. So Joseph was given complete control over the Egyptians at this point. And of course, this was part of the Lord's plan. So let's talk about that part of the Lord's plan as well. In Genesis chapter 15, God made a promise to Abraham in verses 13 and 14. There in verse 13, it says, And he said unto Abram, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. So long before Joseph had come along, the Lord had made a promise to Abraham that Abraham and his seed were going to be, he says, strangers in a land that was not theirs. And he was referring to Egypt. And he notes there that they were going to serve these Egyptians who were going to afflict them for 400 years. So imagine receiving this promise from God that says you're going to go to this land and you're going to be afflicted for 400 years. Well, we see the Lord carries that out in Exodus chapter 12, beginning in verse 40. It says there, Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations. So we remember that when Joseph did come into power in Egypt, it was a time where he and his Israelite brethren were there and given great favor amongst the Egyptians. It appears that that went on for about 30 years because their total time in Egypt was 430 years, as we just read here. But we remember what the Lord had promised to Abraham. 400 out of those 430 years were going to be a time of affliction, that they were going to be serving under the Egyptians. And, of course, we read in the passages about the being put into slavery and having these taskmasters over them. But that was, again, all part of the Lord's plan. And how long was that going to be? Well, we saw that Joseph spent, it was about a total of 13 years from the time that he was 17 until he became the ruler over all of Egypt at 30 years old. So that was about 13 years of Joseph's life that he endured those things before he eventually was made the ruler. But now here is a situation where the Lord has said the entire nation of Israel is going to serve under these Egyptians for 400 years. And so there were generations that came and went during that 400 years that were all under that time of bondage. And again, what would we have done if we were living in that time? How would we have responded? Would we have just said, well, I'm a slave and I'm not able to do anything, and just throw up our hands and give up? Or would we have served the Lord and done good in that capacity as a slave? And so we see here that this is all part of God's work, and that there was a time here in this case where there was a long, long period of needing to wait on the Lord to carry out that plan. In Acts chapter 7, beginning in verse 2, we see Paul speaking concerning this plan that God had. He says, "Men, brethren," in verse 2, "men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein you now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on, yet he promised that he would give it to him for possession and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God. And after that shall they come forth and serve me in this place." So we see Paul here as part of this lesson that he's presenting to the Jews here, reminding them of that promise that God had made to Abraham, of that land that they eventually were going to inherit, but the fact that God also said that in the meantime, before they inherited that land, that they were going to serve these ones who were going to treat them with evil for 400 years. Psalm 37 reminds us how we need to respond in situations where which are perhaps like that of these Israelites who had to serve under these Egyptians. Psalm 37 and verse 1, it says here, a psalm of David. "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thy heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked devices to pass." So once again, we see him concluding there in verse 7 by saying that we need to wait patiently for the Lord, and we don't need to fret ourselves because of these evildoers who may be here in the meantime. This word fret here literally means to glow or grow warm. So we can understand how we could become angry at those who are doing this evil. Consider, again, that situation that Israel went through for those 400 years, and consider the temptation to fret and to become angry over how they were being treated. But we need to be reminded that, once again, the Lord is at work, and this is part of his plan. And so, as he says here in verse 7, our job is to wait patiently for him, to work through his plan. And in the meantime, while we're waiting patiently, we also need to do what he shows there in verse 3, where he says, "Trust in the Lord and do good. That needs to be our mind in whatever situation that we're in. Philippians chapter 1, we'll consider one more who was waiting in the Lord here in our final few minutes. Paul, we read of in Philippians chapter 1 concerning his desire to be with Christ. In verse 20, Paul notes there that in all the things that he was doing, his intention, as he notes there in verse 20, he says, "With all boldness as always, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death." And so we see that regardless of the situations that Paul was in, his intention was that Christ would be magnified in his body, whether it was by Paul's life or by Paul's death. And so Paul was willing to die on behalf of Christ if that was what was required. In verse 21, he says, "For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain." He goes on in verse 23 and said he was in this situation where he was in a strait between two choices. Verse 23, he says, "For I'm in a strait betwixt two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to abide in the flesh is more needful for you." So he wanted to be with Christ, but he realized that the things that he was doing, that preaching the gospel and edifying the body of Christ, he notes there that that was something that was needful for them. And so in verse 25, he says, "Having this confidence, I know that I shall abide and continue with all you all for your furtherance and joy of faith." So Paul understood that the work that he was doing was for their furtherance and for their joy of faith, as he notes. But we also should be reminded that, yes, the work that Paul was doing was strengthening the church. But we also should remember that the Lord was working with Paul himself individually. A couple of chapters later, in Philippians 3, Paul points out that purpose that he had in mind of being made like Christ. In verse 12, when he wrote this to the Philippians at this time, he makes the point that he was not yet to that mark. In verse 12, he says, "Not as though I had already attained," and there he's talking about attained the prize, the resurrection. He says, "Neither as though I had already attained, either were already perfect." So he notes here he's not finished yet. And that's his aim, to reach that mark. And he talks about that in verses 13 and 14. He says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended. But this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." So Paul made it very plain at this point when he was writing to the church in Philippi that he had not yet reached that mark. He was not yet complete. And so what was his goal? What was his aim? Well, verse 14, he says, "I'm pressing toward that mark." So he's making this analogy to a race, right? Just like someone is striving to get across that finish line, that line that's that mark at the end of the raceway. Here was Paul that was pressing for that mark so that he could obtain the prize, which is the resurrection. And so that is where he is at this point in time as he's writing to the Philippians here. But just a short couple of years later, as Paul is writing an epistle to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, we see a different statement from Paul. He says here in verse 6, he says, "For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing." So we notice there, just two short years later, that Paul now is able to say in verse 7 that he had finished his course. So we remember in the Philippians, he said he had not reached that mark. He was not yet complete, but that's what he was striving for. But now he's pointing out and saying, I have finished my course and I have kept the faith. And as a result, what? In verse 8, henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. So Paul had that hope of receiving that crown now that he had finished this course. And so we consider then what the Lord was accomplishing with Paul. Yes, we saw earlier where Paul had that desire to depart and to be with Christ, but the Lord had decided, well, no, he needed to be there to continue to strengthen and build up the brethren. But we also realize that the Lord had some more work to do with Paul as well. And we see that the Lord was able to get Paul to that mark within that time as well. And so we should be encouraged in knowing, again, that the Lord is working. And the Lord has a plan for us individually, as well as whatever plans he may have for this world. And we need to be encouraged to know that he is at work. And we don't know the time frames and exactly the things that he's going to do, but he is going to accomplish and finish that work in us. We'll conclude in Philippians chapter 1, Philippians chapter 1, verses 3 through 7. Here he says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making requests with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Being confident of this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart, inasmuch as both in my bonds and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers of my grace. So we note here that Paul, what did he encourage the ones in Philippi to consider? Well, verse 6, as he said, that God, which has begun a good work in them, and of course this applies to us as well, that God, which has begun a good work in us, will perform it. And that's literally to complete it or fulfill it until the day of Jesus Christ. Our God is capable, fully capable of completing the good work that he has started with each of us. And hopefully we all can be encouraged to wait on him to complete and fulfill that work, and that we all will have our mind set on serving him and on doing good in this life for him. And so I hope we'll all be encouraged and strengthened in our faith to serve him more fully in doing so.